Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by Moneyball.com.au for all you Australian people and New Zealand people listening to this podcast. And Moneyball is Australia and New Zealand's first daily fantasy site, so go ahead and sign up there using the links you'll find on the webpage. My name is Josh Lloyd, and you can find me on Twitter at redrock_bball. Season is about a week away, so we're closing in. So we're just doing a few little things before the season kicks off. What we're going to be doing now is in this podcast, I'm joined by a first-time guest of the podcast, and it is Daniel Reed, who is also known as Stromile Swift on Razzball. So check out his articles there. Daniel, welcome.
How you going, mate?
I'm very well, and as you can probably tell by Daniel's introduction there, he is a fellow countryman of mine, another Aussie into the fantasy industry. Now, Daniel, just give us a bit of a rundown on your fantasy writing, what articles you've put up, what you've got coming up for Razzball, and how you got into this game.
Just started writing for Razzball this year. Just been playing for like the last probably 6 or 7 years, and just wanted to, you know, put some of my knowledge to use, I suppose.
That's how we all get started out. Just think you got something to offer. And you know what? If people read that article that you put up on Razzball, because I don't know if people know, but nearly all of Razzball's content is focused towards 9-category leagues. So what you went out there and did, you know, let's show a bit of love to the people who play in 8-category leagues, which is a good chunk of people. You probably think close to half, if not half, people playing 8-category leagues, where so much talk is based on 9-category leagues and the impact that turnovers can have. But it is a slightly different game. It's not a massive difference, but you're focusing on looking at 8-category leagues.
Yeah, I only play 8-cats, so I don't really like turnovers like you.
Yeah, not a huge turnover fan myself. And look, but you know what? I'm okay with having. Look, I say I don't like turnovers. I don't mind having turnovers in a league. I just completely don't concern myself with it, especially during the drafting stage. If it comes out that I'm okay in turnovers, then I'll pay somewhat attention to it, but it's not something that I use to base my decisions on in trades or free agent pickups or drafting, because it tends to have a real negative effect on all of the other categories. So I tend to avoid it, but it can be useful in certain situations, certain punt builds, but in general, I'm treating most leagues as an 8-cat league, and if I get a win in turnovers, it's an extra bonus. And I think that's the way that, you know, a lot of people think. Now, Daniel, we're both situated in Australia. We're watching the NBA from afar. But we've been paying a lot of attention to preseason, as bad as some of the preseason is, and as bad as some of as hard to decipher as some of the value is. We've got a list of guys we're going to touch on here. The first guy I want to touch on is friend of the podcast and host of the Daily Fantasy Basketball Podcast, Mark Roberts. His current boyfriend, John Jenkins, who has been, it's fair to say, he's been tearing it up lately. How much have you seen of Jenkins so far, and what do you make of what's happening?
I just actually added him today in one of my leagues.
I did it a couple of days ago.
Yeah, no, it's kind of hard to tell with Dallas because of how many people they've actually got out and like what their roster looks like in preseason at the moment. He definitely has the opportunity to produce.
Look, it looks like he's going to be the starter to start the season. We don't know how long it's going to be because we don't know when Wes Matthews is going to be back. This is the case for so many guys who are injured. We don't know when they're going to come back. We heard reports that it's going to be Christmas. Then it's like, no, whoever said it's going to be Christmas is an idiot. And then Wes Matthews is not far off from full contact and all this sort of stuff. We don't know when Matthews is going to come back. Jenkins could have a big role for the first month of the season. Could be the first 2 months of the season. He could play, you know, 30 minutes a game for 2 months. He could, you know, be dropped to 25 minutes as Matthews eases himself back in. We just don't know at this point. But one thing is for certain, Daniel, when you have a look at the preseason scoring leaders, you see Kyle Lowry on top. You see Damian Lillard second. Yeah, fair enough. That makes sense. Anthony Davis comes in third. John Jenkins comes in fourth. And Steph Curry comes in fifth. One of those names doesn't make sense, and it's clearly Jenkins. But yeah, Mark Roberts has been banging on about this for the last 4 months, I reckon, is that Jenkins' per-possession numbers are fantastic, and all he needed was an opportunity, and it looks like he's getting it. What's your recommendation with him now? How do you see him? Is he someone that you obviously went and scouted for on the waiver wire for him today? Is it someone that you think he should be owned in every league, or do you think it's just a wait-and-see approach depending on who you're dropping?
Yeah, it depends on who you're dropping, but yeah, I'd leave it probably not in 12 teams. But maybe 14 to 16, I'd definitely be adding. I think he's definitely jumped ahead of like Justin Anderson.
No doubt about that.
Yeah, from Dallas, who's, I don't see a reason not to add him, but depending on who's on your wire, really.
Well, that's the thing, and this is something that I'm going to get out there now, and I'm sure I'm going to have to repeat it a few times during the season, that people will always, speaking of Twitter, Daniel, you started up a Twitter account today, so do you want to give people a heads up of when that Twitter account is so they can get your followers up, because you've just started it brand new and they can interact with you there, so throw your Twitter handle out there to everyone.
So it's at StroSwift, so StroSwift.
So go ahead and help boost Daniel's following as he just started today and get in there and involve him in questions. But what I was going to say is that I'm going to get questions and you'll start getting the questions as well. Do I drop this guy or do I add this guy? And without context, it's not hard. It's impossible to answer those questions because one thing that I will always say, Daniel, is I don't like a question, should I drop this guy? Because you're never just dropping someone. Like, there's no point just dropping someone because you're not gonna run with an empty roster spot. You drop someone to add someone. And yeah, a guy might be out for the season and you say, okay, then he is definitely droppable, but you're not just dropping him. Like, the question is, who do I add for this guy? It's not like, you know, someone asked me today, you know, is Kevin Martin droppable? Well, yes, but who are you replacing him with? You know, if Jeremy Lin's around, I'm grabbing Jeremy Lin over Kevin Martin every day of the week. If your other option is Marcus Thornton for Houston, then I'll say stick with Kevin Martin. It depends completely. You're never just dropping someone for the sake of dropping them. You're dropping them to pick up someone. So I always like to frame the question is, I'm going to pick up this guy. Should I drop Martin? That leads me back to the Jenkins question. Is it? Yes, he's going to be a decent ad. But if you kick your draft's ass and you've got all his top 100 guys and no one outside of that, then there's probably not a spot for Jenkins on your team. So you really do need to investigate. And by all means, throw me a tweet. Do I drop this guy for Jenkins? Do I drop this guy? At this stage, I think we can bank on him having value for a month. And I think that's worth grabbing him perhaps as the last pick of a draft. But I don't see it really going too much further than that. And once Parsons and Matthews are back, he's back to a 16-team league sort of guy. So that's sort of how you view it?
Yeah, well, just to put it in reference, in my league, I'd be dropping either Stanley Johnson, Myers Leonard, or Mozgov, and I haven't done that, so that's where I view him.
And look, if you were desperate for scoring, and you go, "What? I'm set in, set in blocks, and I'm set in field goal percentage and rebounds," then Mozgov could be moved. I'm not dropping Myers Leonard for him, I know that much, and I'm not going to drop Stanley Johnson for him because they've got much more season-long potential. But if you go, my team is pretty stacked in rebounds, Mozgov's going to have value in rebounds, and rebounds, you can replace them throughout the season, then I'd be okay doing it. But then if points aren't what you need and three-pointers aren't what you need, there's no point just grabbing him and going, "Yeah, well, I grabbed John Jenkins, great," but then he doesn't do anything for your team. It's very situationally dependent. It's going to be the same for most of these guys we talk about, but he's a name who's red hot that I'm going to gather that I'd say 70% of NBA fans have no idea who John Jenkins is. Would you reckon that's accurate?
More than accurate, I reckon, mate.
So when you grabbed him in your league today, I don't know who the guys in your league are. How many of them went? Who the hell's that, do you think?
It was in this Razzball 9 Cat League.
Oh, okay, well, most of those guys would know then.
Yeah, they haven't mentioned anything yet, but they're really nothing on the wire in that league, so I can't even remember who I dropped for him. But,
He's definitely someone you need to know about him now. He's always had those great perp 36 numbers, but now he's got a significant opportunity, so keep an eye on him. The next guy I want to transition to is someone that I mentioned before, Daniel, Jeremy Lin, who was fantastic today. I thought he was really good. He's played really well in Charlotte. And you know what? And this brings me back, and I have to get this into as many shows as I can. The fact that he last season played behind Ronnie Price is one of the greatest coaching abominations of all time. He was great last season when he did get a chance to play. He's going to get big minutes here. To me, he is a guy that he shouldn't be sitting on any waiver wires in any leagues. Doesn't mean it has to be on your team, but he shouldn't be available. Do you concur with that, or do you think that you'd be happy leaving him there?
Oh, I actually rushed to the wire today to get him Kemba Walker went down, but he was already on a team.
I think I've got him in five leagues.
Yeah, well, especially with the Kidd Gilchrist injury, they're going to have to play him at shooting guard, I think. More often.
They have to.
Like, 28 minutes, maybe? 28 to 30?
Yeah, what have I got? I've got him at 26 at the moment, and it feels low. It feels like I need to adjust that because Jeremy Lamb's proven nothing in this league. PJ Hairston's proven nothing in this league. And Hairston will probably start from all reports, and he was okay today. But it doesn't mean he's starting does not equal 30-plus minutes. He might start and play 22 minutes. Lynn is going to play a significant role. Lamb went down today. Kemba Walker went down in a lot of pain. He did manage to come back, so there's no worry there. So to me, Jeremy Lynn is someone. Now, if you, again, it does depend on your team a little bit. If you don't want what he brings, which is a high free throw percentage, good assists, which are going to be so hard to come by, threes and steals, then what's the point? If you're looking for big men, it's not helping. But yeah. My point is he's not must-own. He's not must-owned by your team, but he's must-owned by somebody in your league. He shouldn't be sitting on a waiver wire in a 12-10 team league anymore. I can't see why he should be there. Anything for you to add on, Lynn?
Well, I'll just add in that any point guard really gets a bump, I reckon, this season, more than anyone. Like, just with the assisting and all that comes with a point guard, trying to get a solid to deep point guard. I'd add them in. No worries.
Yeah, you shouldn't really have any concern with adding a guy that if your guy can get you 5 assists, there's significant value. He can average 12, 13 points as well. He can get you that 3. He can get you a steal. Like in the preseason, he's at 4.5 assists, and that's not in. That's only in 24 minutes. And we think he's going to get more minutes than that. He's at 11.2 points. He's at 1.5 threes. He's at only half a steal. He's shooting 71%, which is something that's going to go way up. He is hitting his field goals at a ridiculous rate. He's at 57%, and he's not going to do that. So don't bank on that. That's not who Jeremy Lin is, but he's going to do those other numbers. So I think that he's going to be a bit of a bounce back after being buried in LA last season, which was quite unfair from my point of view. I want to talk about a couple of Nuggets players, Daniel. Now, I was urged not to talk about this guy, but I think I have to because whoever it was that tweeted at me and said, can you just lay off the hype on Gary Harris for the next 3 days because he wants to get him in his draft? Now, I don't think there's a huge amount of hype on him, but everything to me is pointing that he's going to be the starting shooting guard in Denver. He wasn't good last season. I think that's pretty fair to say. He wasn't good, but we see a lot of players between their first and second seasons have a significant bump. Now, he's averaging, the thing that I like here is averaging 27 minutes a game in the preseason. He's hitting 1.5 three. He's almost at 2 steals a game, a great free throw percentage. 1.5 threes, as I said, you're not going to get much in terms of assists and rebounds, but you'll get some scoring, some threes, some steals, and some pretty good free throw percentage. He's way behind Lynn. He's probably behind Jenkins at this point, but he's someone who, if you want some defensive numbers in a deeper league, or if you want to take a flyer in a standard league, I think he's going to win that role. And I drafted Randy Foy in a league, and I'm looking to move on from him pretty quickly because I don't think he's going to get many minutes there with Harris there, especially with the way that they're using him this preseason. Do you have any sort of conflicting view on Gary Harris, or what have you thought of him so far?
As long as Randy Foy is not getting minutes.
You happy with that?
Yeah, exactly. I think Malone will probably be, it'd be more inclined to give all the young guys minutes. So you're looking at, Harris and, what they've got Moutier starting at point guard. So they're the backcourt of the future. So what's the point in not playing them? So
they've got an exciting core of guys. And you look, his season was bad last year. He did play, he played probably more minutes than you might think. He played 23 minutes a game last season, which I think people... he played 13 minutes a game last season, which I think people might be a little bit... not confused, but they might not have seen him actually play that much because I barely saw him play. But the thing is, he shot 30% from the field last year. Now, you'd have to think that that's going to go up this year. He shot 20% from three. You'd expect big bumps, 8, 9% in the field goals, 10, 11% in the threes. I would think that you would hope... we would hope that he'd get that. And in the preseason, he's at 50% from the field and 47% from three. Now, we're not going to get that sort of a bump, but he's going to be a guy that if you want to take, and some people really love taking a flyer at that last pick, I think he's going to be a decent sort of flyer, especially in a 14-team league, maybe a 12, but he's a name to keep an eye out, especially for people who you might not have even considered Gary Harris. So I do apologize to whoever was that tweeted at me today. And hopefully you don't have anyone in your league that listens to the podcast. But if you do, I am sorry. And hopefully you are able to get your hands on Gary Harris. A couple of his teammates, Nikola Jokic and Joffrey Lavernier, they've been really impressive. Part of this young brigade that that Denver has got. What's your take on the two big men?
Denver just recruited European centres and power forwards. That's all they ever do, isn't it?
Look, but I love all of them. I really like these guys.
Yeah, I'd just be worried about the minute, especially with Nurkic, I reckon, is the one to own out of the three.
Yep.
But without him playing, like, there's nothing you can really see. I owned him last year, and he was putting up some... I think he had, like, a four-block, two-steal game, and people were just going absolutely mental about him on some of the forums that I was reading on.
Yep.
But to the start of the year, I can't see how he's going to play more than... No, this is Nurkic. I can't see how they're going to play him more than 10, 15 minutes. He hasn't done anything for, 4 months now?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's been... He had the surgery since April, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's been a long time.
So I see... I like Jokic better than Lavernier, but I can see him playing Lavernier more.
I don't know. I don't know what I see, to be honest. I like Jokic more as well. He is a rookie. Now, Lavernier hasn't been in the league for a huge amount of time, but he played half a season last year, but he's probably been the better performer in preseason. Doesn't mean a huge amount, though. So what's Lavernier? Let's have a look at his numbers. He's averaging, he's playing 25 minutes throughout the preseason, 13 points, 8.8 rebounds. He hasn't blocked a single shot, though, which as a big man is probably not ideal. Half a three, but he's a great shooter. 59 and 81 are his two percentages. You're not going to get assists from him. You're not going to get blocks. You're not getting... It's going to be points and rebounds. Jokic, I think, is going to be a different guy. I think he's going to be a better three-point shooter. I think he is overall a better player. But who gets the minutes? Are either of them worth a gamble in a 12-team league?
I wouldn't do it in 12, no.
I tend to agree with you.
Yeah, I reckon they're more 14 to 16. But, like, having said that, someone's got to get the minutes.
Nurkic is there. Well, there's, yeah, unfortunately, JJ Hickson's still alive and Darrell Arthur is there. So some of those guys are going to get some sort of minutes. But I really wish they would just go completely Euro heavy and just get these guys into the mix. Now, they're not going to be a good team at all. I would really like them to do out there. Now, I mentioned Lavernier stats. I've got Jokic's up here. He's played less minutes, less than 20 a game, but he's still at almost 12 points, 5 rebounds, 0.7 blocks, a steal, 75%. He's actually shooting a higher field goal percentage than free throw percentage. And considering he's shooting 75 from the line, the 78 from the field is pretty impressive. He's not a good, hasn't rebounded as well, but he's giving you those defensive numbers. I really want Jokic to get the minutes if Nurkic is out. And just saying Jokic and Nurkic together is going to get very confusing, I think. But I agree with you. I don't think that either of them are worth a look. Until maybe we see that first game and you've got your finger hovered over the waiver wire button, then you can go and grab whichever one you see get the minutes. But at this point, it's too up in the air for me.
I'm just looking at Jokic now. And in the domestic league, he averaged 59.3% field goal.
Yeah, it's pretty big. He's a really decent. He's not even a decent player. He's a really good player. He was a guy that before he came over, I was hyping him up as a guy that you wanted to keep an eye on. He was a second round draft choice last season. I'm really excited to see what he can do. Just had a comment come in from on YouTube from Pravab Pradhan, and he says, "As a true blue Aussie, I am ashamed of your lack of support for our boy Paddy Mills. Start talking him up, please." What do you want to say about Paddy Mills, Daniel? We'll just go off topic here because Proverbs calling us out as being unpatriotic. What's your take on Paddy Mills this season?
He started last preseason game, went 2 from 10.
It was, that's about right.
Yeah, so I actually met Paddy Mills a couple of years back. Nice guy. Look, with Tony Parker available, but they have got rid of Corey Joseph. So, Paddy Mills, I'd say, depending what Tony Parker produces, I could see Paddy Mills being owned in a 12 to 14.
Yep.
But having said that, even with Parker, if he does go down, I can't really see Paddy Mills going anywhere above maybe 100.
He's limited by the way he plays. Like, he's not a big assist guy. But he can be a guy that goes out there and is a real scoring machine, and he can hit threes. He's going to have a pretty good free throw percentage. You're not going to get assists out of him. No, Ray McCallum's going to be that distributor. But Paddy Mills is going to be, I think, probably a 14-team league guy, even in a backup role. He's similar to Isaiah Thomas in that he doesn't need big minutes to accumulate pretty decent scoring numbers, but that's all he's going to do. So he's going to be a great streaming option. I need threes, I need points. Let's grab Paddy Mills and do that. But for overall long-term value, yeah, the ceiling for him is limited. Like, he's going to be steady, but the ceiling is going to be pretty limited, in my opinion. I'm not swayed by Aussie bias. I'm not going to be going out there and drafting Bogut and Mills and Delavid over in my leagues. I like to be pretty realistic with what I think of these guys, and don't think there's going to be a huge upside for Mills, but I could be proven wrong. But his value comes in points and threes, and that's really about it.
He won't start either. Actually, thinking about it, if Parker goes down, they'll start McCollum.
Yeah, they will. And they'll keep, because they like to keep those bench guys in their bench roles, and that's, you know, Mills will have that six man scorer sort of role. So he'll be that guy that comes off the bench, and that's fine. But it's not going to be all that great for fantasy leagues. Wanted to throw a quick comment out on Marcelo Huertas for the Lakers. He's had some pretty decent numbers in preseason. He's averaging 7 assists through 2 games. Don't care. We're not dealing with Marcelo Huertas in anything under than a 20-team league at this point. There's just too many guys that handle the ball ahead of him. Clarkson, Russell, Williams, Kobe. He's had 7 assists per game in only 15 minutes a game, and that's superb. But he's not going to get an assist every 2 minutes in the regular season. You might be able to stream him to get 3 assists or 4 assists across a weekend. But let's not go too crazy, as I've seen some people do on some of the forums. Should we add Marcelo Huertas? No, you shouldn't. Am I missing something with him?
No, not at all. Apart from having probably the coolest name in basketball.
Well, that's a big statement. The coolest name in basketball. I would go Raul Neto. He's probably cooler than that.
Oh, well, top 5 then.
Top. No. Okay. Well, let's off the top of your head, top 5. I've already mentioned the one that I like the most is Joffrey Lavergne. He's right up there. Lavergne, Joffrey. I can't go past that as probably the top name in basketball. Who else you got up there in your top names?
Currently playing or retired.
Oh, no, let's not go retire, because we could be pulling some, because you can't beat World Be Free or Scientific Map. Did he ever get into the NBA?
My favorite.
Who is that?
My favorite. I've got to go past because I love Stromar Swift, but another guy like is Pops Mensa Bonsu.
Yeah, that's a good name. That's a very good name, actually. There is, you know what? You look at him for so long, and they just become commonplace. And you go, yeah, that's just the guy's name. Yeah, oh, yeah, that's Pops. Like, no, that's a silly name. I know it probably means a huge amount to him and his family, but it looks funny at first, and then it just becomes part of everything that you look at with these guys, and you think, yeah, that's just his name now. Go ahead.
Another one I like is Luke Richard and Amute.
Yes, I don't, you know what I don't like? I don't like that he dropped the Richard out of his name. And he just went with Luke last season. I liked having it's not even Richard, it's a French Richard. And I think that puts it right up there for me as well. Let's talk CJ McCollum, the darling of everybody, basically fantasy sleeper extraordinaire. I've been debating him for quite a while, in terms of, I think that people need to just calm their tits a little bit on his output. He blew up yesterday and put up a huge scoring performance. A little bit back to earth today. What's your take on him? Where are you grabbing him? And is he a guy that, you know, some people say, I've got to have CJ on my team. I've got to grab him. Don't care if I grade 2 rounds too early. Where do you see him sort of placing this year?
Pretty sure he got drafted about pick 60 in one of the leagues.
To me, that's ludicrous. That's so high.
Yeah, that's his ceiling. So yeah. What's the point?
I agree.
Yeah, so I had the option. I got Mirotić at 84, and I see them similar. Like, they're not going to produce the same stats, but I can see them both, you know, providing the same value towards the end of the season.
Okay. I have Mirotić way higher, like significantly higher. Look, okay, look, in the game, go ahead.
No, it's just good news for my team.
Yeah, well, if I'm right, that remains to be seen. But look, against Utah, he was great. He had 26 points. He came back from a really horrid shooting night. He had 9 assists. But he's a guy who's never been able to get assists, really, throughout his career. He was at abysmally poor levels last season in the playoffs and in the regular season. In college, he was never a big assist guy. But in the preseason, he's had 4, 5, 4, 5, 9 assists. But then he came out today, and this is what you're going to get from him. So you're not going to get big nights. So he came out today and had 10.0 assists. And you're going to get that some nights from him. He's not going to be this all-conquering, look at CJ McCollum, 20-point scorer, all-star, anything like that. There's going to be bad nights from him. He's going to struggle in the peripheral numbers. He hasn't had a steal in the last 3 games, which is something that was going to be one of the things. Yeah, he'll get you some steals. He's hitting threes at an abundant rate, and he's always going to do that. He's probably going to get close to 2 threes a game. He's going to score okay. I'm a bit worried about his percentages, although they've been pretty good the last couple of games in preseason. I just think that, if you're getting into the 60s for him, that doesn't become value anymore. If I'm getting him around 100, 90 even, maybe he exceeds that. But at 60, like, is he realistically got a chance of being above that? I think it's pretty unlikely. You'd seem to agree with me there. But he's put up some big performances, but you're going to get some bad ones thrown in there as well. And you know what? Other teams will go, who else do we have to focus on this Portland team? They'll start shutting him down, because who else are they going to shut down? They'll have to do it. They'll have to put focus on him, because there's no one else that can really score on this team. So that's something to be careful. I'm not trying to pour water all over the heating up fire nature of CJ McCollum, but everything we've seen from him so far hasn't been great up until this preseason. And it's just something to be a little bit cautious of, instead of going, let's grab him at pick 60. That feels early to me.
Tell you one other thing about him as well. He shot 67% from the line in his first year.
Yep.
69% in his second year. But in his, 4 years of college, he was above 80.
He was. Year, so. And that's the thing. Well, yeah. But what is it? What's the difference? And is that the thing that came into my head was, is that a pressure thing? He was overawed in the NBA for his first 2 seasons. The higher pressure environment, the different crowds, the different players. Is that the cause of a 10% dip? Is he more settled now and his numbers are going up? I don't know.
I just don't know how you can bank on him shooting over 80%, though.
No, you can't at this point.
Yeah, so he's probably going to be a negative. I reckon he's actually going to get to the line quite a lot, but I don't know if he's going to be a positive in that category for you, because he'll need to get another 8% on his free throw from last year.
Yeah, and look, he could do it. The last 2 games, he didn't attempt a free throw today, but he was 2 from 2 in the last previous 2 games, 3 from 4 the game before that, and then the game before that, he was 4 from 6. That's not a good night. 75% is, it's below average. It's a negative for your team on 4 attempts, and that's not a big negative, but it's not a positive influence. You're going to have nights where he hurts it. You're going to have nights where he helps it to a degree, but overall, I'm not convinced he becomes an 80% shooter, because show us, do it. You haven't yet. You haven't been able to do that for us yet. And same with the assists. You haven't proven any sort of ability to get assists throughout the first two seasons in the NBA. And even through college, he wasn't a big assist guy. The preseason's been encouraging. I'm getting more and more encouraged by it, but I'm still, the more that I get encouraged by it, the more other people get extra encouraged by it. And that means he gets even further out of my range of looking at him. Philadelphia point guard situation. It's a mess. We know that. Isaiah Cannon, TJ McConnell. Cannon is, to me, it's Cannon that you want to grab, and I think that he's a worthwhile add in standard leagues. Roten and Kendall Marshall won't be back for the first month at least of the season, it appears like. What's your take on TJ McConnell? Why can't I say his name? TJ McConnell. Oh, let's try again. TJ McConnell. What's your feeling on him, because he's had a couple of big preseason games.
Hickey brought in Cannon, didn't he?
He traded him for KJ McDaniels.
Yeah, so I'm avoiding pretty much all Philly point guards. The only one I'm really interested in is Kendall Marshall, but that's a while away. And what I was hearing is that to get an assist, the person has to make the shot, and they're really going to struggle to make shots, I reckon, this year. So old Evan wouldn't be surprised if Marshall can't really get his dimes above 5 to 6. And that's, he needs to get 25 to 30 minutes to do that, and I can't see him getting that.
You can't draft Marshall. You can't draft Roten. Look, TJ McConnell, this is killing me. Why can't I say this guy's name? TJ McConnell, these numbers look okay. 7.3 points aren't good, but 4 rebounds, 5.8 assists, 2.8 steals in 23 minutes. That's pretty impressive. But is it going to continue? I'm guessing that he's not going to be that guy who's a 4 rebound, 6 assists, 3 steal guy. That's pretty unlikely. Cannon's the guy that, if I'm going to add someone from this team as a point guard, I'm adding him. I can add someone who'll get me 13 points and will give me 2 threes a game and will be a nice free throw guy and give me 4 assists. I think that he's going to have more value rather than an unproven guy like McConnell. And Cannon is the guy that I want. But when I say want, it's a very weak want.
Yeah, he did blow up last year for a couple of games. So if you're playing head-to-head, he could probably win you the week in threes in one game. I remember, I think last year, hit 8 or 10 threes a game.
Oh yeah, he had a massive. I think in 23 minutes he averaged 2.3 threes since he arrived in Philadelphia, and they're really good numbers. You talked about guys not hitting shots. Robert Covington's averaging 2.5 threes a game in 24 minutes his preseason. So there's some pretty decent numbers. He's actually 4th in the league in preseason 3-pointers made. Steph Curry number 1, Kyle Lowry number 2, Dougie McDermott number 3, and then Covington at 4th. The other guy I wanted to touch on, just a quick touch on him, Brandon Knight. We weren't really sure how he was going to fit in Phoenix. He's played 23 minutes so far. He's hitting 2.3 threes. He hasn't missed a free throw. He's at 4 assists. He looks like he's going to be okay. He's going to return that mid-round value. Are you steering clear of Brandon Knight, or are you a bit more comfortable with him now?
I'm worried about the ankle and the whole preseason. Bledsoe hasn't played much this preseason.
Bledsoe. I'll have to bring it up. No one really plays a huge amount.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Knight started at point guard the last 2 games.
Okay.
Because Bledsoe missed. But the other thing that I saw is Knight's steals completely fell off when he went to Phoenix.
Yep.
And small sample size, but for his value, he needs to be up at around 1 to 1.5.
He's at 1.8 this preseason in 23 minutes, at 1.8, so that's sort of encouraging.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's probably what, around 50 to 65, I'd take him.
He's a guy that slides, though. Look, if he's one of those people, and there's not many of them, but when they sit at the top of the draft list, he's a guy who will drop 10 spots, and then you might be able to get something out of him. He might get him at 60, and I think that becomes really good value. He's a guy who does slide a lot. There are other guys who slide, like in ESPN, when Chandler Parsons at 29, you let him slide 50 spots before you really consider him. You know, Dirk's at like 36 or something, you let him slide. But Brandon Knight slides as well, and I'm okay with then jumping on and grabbing him a bit later. Clint Capella started today in place of Dwight Howard. Donatas Motiejunas has not made an appearance this preseason. Dwight Howard has not made an appearance this preseason. Terrence Jones is battling concussion. We don't know if he's going to be ready. Is it all aboard the Clint Capella train for at least the first couple of games this season?
Depends what format, but yeah, I'd be onto him.
I added him today in a 12-team league.
Yeah, just that free throw that I'm really scared of.
Well, this is a league where I'm punting free throws. I moved Dwight Howard to IR and added Clint Capella because I'm not worried about his free throws. He's the 4th leading rebounder in the preseason. Dwight has played 1 preseason game and he had 11 rebounds. Andre Drummond is leading the preseason in rebounds. The third guy completely blows my mind that he's up there, and that's Tyler Hansbrough. He's at 10.3 rebounds a game. Don't draft Tyler Hansbrough. But Clint Capella, he is such an exciting guy to watch. I can't wait to see him develop. I can't wait to see him get a shot at minutes here. He can be a double-digit rebounder. He could score 10 points. He could block 2-3 shots a game, potentially. He's at 1.5 so far in his 26 minutes. He could approach a steal a game. He's going to give you big field goal percentage. So if you're looking for someone in a punt free throw situation, Clint Capella for the first week of the season, maybe. We don't know the timeline on Dwight at this point. if he's going to be back. Dwight's definitely missing the first game because he's suspended. So you know you're going to get 26, 27, 28 minutes of Capella in game one. And that might be enough to just add him in for that one game. But we need to find out some more concrete information about Dwight. So, as I said, I added him as I moved Dwight into IR. And that's fine in a 12-team league, but you don't want to drop anyone of value to grab him. But if he plays, I think there's a lot to like about him.
Yeah, it definitely reminds you of Dwight Howard Light. So that's if you do have Dwight, he's pretty much a ready-made replacement.
Exactly. I want to throw a couple of other names out there before we get onto some listener questions. Daniel, a couple of names that people need to pay attention to. Nemanja Bjelica, he is going to have a pretty significant role in deeper leagues for the Timberwolves. He can hit threes, he'll rebound, he's going to be a good percentage guy, he's going to score. You need to pay attention to him, even some 12-team formats maybe, but he's a guy you want to keep an eye on. Mo Harkless is getting more minutes I think a lot of people would have anticipated. I'm a big Mo Harkless fan. I thought he has played quite well in Portland. Keep an eye on him. And in deeper leagues, Joseph Young in Indiana is a guy that has clearly won the backup point guard role there. George Hill had some injury problems last season. Doesn't mean it's going to carry over this season. But if Joseph Young gets minutes and is a starter in that team, he would have short-term 12-team league value, I think. So he's a name that not everyone might know about. But I think that at some point this season, there is always a second-round player who does something every season. There's always, you know, KJ McDaniels was the hype guy last year. Chandler Parsons has been that in the past. Joseph Young could be that guy this season. He's a name that you have to be aware of. What are your thoughts on those guys? Bjelica, Harkless, and Young.
I can't say it, but yeah.
Hey, that was all right. It's better than me.
In the running for best name as well.
Yeah, that is a good name.
I can see him really getting there towards the middle of the year when some of these guys go down, because someone has to go down in Minnesota or get traded. So at 25 minutes, I can see him producing in 12 games.
Yep.
Harkless, I've played before, and he can really rack up the steals.
He can be steals and threes. He can do. Oh, I really like Harkless.
Yeah. So depending on injuries, I wouldn't be rostering him at the moment, but he'd be on a watch list.
These are guys that just keep an eye on in the first week of the season. See what they do, see how it plays out. And they're names that you've got to remember, which some people who aren't necessarily as deep into all of this might not really be aware of what they can do. They're just, I think that he's a guy to look out for. And Young?
Yeah, same thing. Just keep the eye on him, see what happens. And if the opportunity is there, I'm sure he'll grasp it.
One last thing before we move on to listener questions. I'm a big a watcher of NBA hairstyles. What's your thought on Kevin Love and his current do with the headband?
I like Kevin Love. I like him when he does.
It's a weird look. I was looking at who's this guy? Who's this guy with long curly hair and a headband? Oh my god, it's Kevin Love. Definitely a different look. We'll see if it pans out for him, but he's definitely edging his way into the top five of the follicular all-stars with the NBA. So I'm real happy to see a white guy, curly hair, with a headband out there who's not Anderson Varejao. So it's good to see Kevin Love out there rocking that headband. I just wanted to throw that out there. Let's move into questions, Daniel. Aaron Groot I'm horrible with names today. Aaron Kroot, not a bigger tree-like creature. Aaron says, who do you like as a late pick, Aaron Gordon or Al-Farouq Aminu?
Yeah. I'll take Gordon.
Okay.
I reckon he's got the higher upside.
I would agree with the upside part.
They're both really quite similar, like where they can give you the three hard categories, threes, steals, and blocks.
Yep.
With something that isn't going to help, because I think Gordon is really going to struggle from the line.
Well, he was much more impressive last season from the free throw line. That he was like a 40% guy at Arizona, and he was a 70% guy last season, or close to a 70% guy, which completely shocked me. Now, that could be a fluke. It could be that he really worked on it, but everything I've seen from him, he's willing to work on his weaknesses, so maybe he did really put the effort in. So I'm not really as concerned that I was about his ability to hit shots from the free throw line.
Have you got the... you know what he went to the line at last year? Just a sample size.
I can tell you that if you want to just play some hold music for me.
Yeah, I just know that it's a really small sample size.
Yeah, he went in. Oh, let's have a look. Total shots. Where are we? He went to the line. This is really enthralling. 61 times and hit 44 of them.
Yeah, it's not too bad, is it?
Yeah, it's look. He went there at 1.3 attempts a game. Yeah, so it's not a huge amount, but he still hit 72% of them, which is way higher than I thought he would go. He's only played one preseason game.
Did you see Hazania's assist to Aaron Gordon as well?
The bounce pass alley-oop.
Yeah.
It was pretty impressive.
They're going to be a fun team to watch.
I already love watching them already, but adding in more Aaron Gordon and adding in Hazania is pretty exciting. Oladipo, Payton, these guys are superb. I like Vucevic a lot as well. I think that Vucevic can really improve his defense this year as well and get some defensive some block numbers up there as well. I think he's going to be a real interesting guy who should show some pretty good growth this season too. Now back to the question at hand. I think Gordon's going to score more than Aminu. I think Aminu's probably going to rebound better, but steals and blocks is where they're both going to really get their value. Gordon does have the higher upside. Aminu has probably got the higher floor. Depends on where your risk is. Have you taken a lot of huge flyers before that? I think Aminu is going to be relatively solid. We've seen him do what he does for the last three or four seasons, not score, but hit some threes and get some steals and blocks, whereas Gordon, we really don't know. I would look, even though I've got Aminu ranked higher, and that's based on what I think they're going to do. But if I'm factoring in that what they could do, I think Gordon is the guy to go for there. And then if it doesn't work, then move on, get someone else. Thank you, Aaron. Fantasy_Oz, maybe another Aussie. If you're getting LeBron in the first round, are you taking the opportunity to punt, or are you picking Gobert in the second round and leaving your options open? He followed up by saying, so you're going to grab Drummond in the second round or Jordan, or are you going with Gobert in the second round? How do you approach with LeBron this season?
So this would have to be head-to-head.
Head-to-head, yep.
Just depends who's falling, but I don't necessarily think you have to punt with LeBron.
Yeah, you don't have to, no.
But, yeah, if he's there and you're looking to punt, I'd be taking DeAndre. I wouldn't be taking Gobert.
Yeah, I would. Look, and the thing is, he says you can take Gobert and leave your options open. There's still a relatively decent chance that Gobert forces a punt anyway, because his free throw attempts have gone up significantly this preseason and he hasn't hit them well. He probably won't be a punt guy. He might get to 70%. That's possible. But there's also a chance that he stays at 60% and goes at 4.5 attempts. And then that's hard to recover from. Like, we know Dwight Howard's a bad free throw shooter, but he's not 38%. He's not Andre Drummond. Dwight Howard's like 56%, but he does it on so many attempts that it sinks you. That's the problem. And if Gobert's getting 4.5, 5 free throw attempts a game at 59, 60%, that can be a problem. So it's not I'm grabbing Gobert and I'm avoiding the punt. You might not be. Probably a 10% chance that you might not be, but you still might not be. And that's my concern there. Adding him with LeBron's fine, because LeBron's points will make up for Gobert's lack of points. But yeah, if you're punting, it's Drummond or Jordan that are ahead of Gobert to me.
Yeah. And if you are taking LeBron and Gobert, I'd be punting anyway. I wouldn't really be leaving the option open.
Yeah. Might as well just focus in on some other areas. Now, Barry Baker, the podcast question maker, he's back for another season. He's on Twitter at BarryBaker8664. Is Gordon Hayward at pick 16 a reach? And who would you advise me to take at pick 6 if I was to go for Hayward? So somehow Barry's picking his second pick before his first pick, but that's fine. Gordon Hayward at pick 16, is it a reach?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
But best case, I can't see him getting anywhere above 16. I can't see him pushing into the top 12. But I'm just trying to work out. If he's got pick 6, how's he have pick 16? So is this
unless he's made. I don't know. I haven't even worked that out yet.
Yeah, I was just trying to work out what type of league it is.
No, if he's had, but, yeah, that doesn't even make sense, 6 and 16. But anyway, maybe he's made trades to get those picks. Whatever. That's the question. Let's assume that. Okay, so you think that's above his ceiling?
I think that's his ceiling. I think that's his ceiling. I can't see him getting into the top 10, top 12.
I don't think he gets in the top 10. I think he can push to top 15, but it picks. I don't hate it. I don't hate them. I think he's going to be really, really good this season, Gordon Hayward, but there's probably guys ahead of him that I would want there. But if some of the other guys that you wanted and you really wanted to target a guy who gets you 4 or 5 assists at that point, and you're left with some big men like Millsap or someone like that, and you don't want to go that route, it's okay. I probably wouldn't. I reckon you can get Hayward in round 3 in most sort of situations. I answered Barry on Twitter. I said, look, it's not really a reach, but it's probably a little bit. Pick 6, I don't try and reverse engineer your draft and go, I want Hayward at 16, so then who do I pair with him at pick 6? Work out who's going at 6. You could get anyone at 6. You know, I saw a draft today where Kevin Durant fell to 7. So you could get Durant at 6. You could get Chris Paul there. You could get LeBron, Westbrook, DeMarcus Cousins. You've got so many options of guys that you can pick there. Work out who falls to you. See who goes at 4, most likely Durant. See who goes at 5. It could be Westbrook. You might be left with a choice between Cousins, LeBron, and Chris Paul there. And then you can go with it from there. Then, you know, if you're grabbing Chris Paul there, then I don't think Gordon Hayward's a good pick there. Then you want to grab Al Horford in round 2, or you can go with, you know, with Paul Millsap at that stage, or someone else. I want to know. I want you to have a plan at the pick 6 first. Don't go, I'm getting Hayward no matter what, and then grab someone in the first round to suit Gordon Hayward. I don't think that's a good way of going about it.
Yeah, and the thing with Hayward at 16, the ones you'd be comparing him to is what, probably Carmelo and Paul George.
Yeah, I think Mallow's a better option there.
Yeah, but Hayward's probably the less of a risk, I reckon, there. But
that's true.
The upside, I just can't see the upside. No, I can't see him getting that far ahead of 16.
No, I agree with that. The risk with him is less than Mallow and less than Paul George at that point, but yeah, the ups depends. It depends how you want to go. If you're in a high money league that you need to finish, you know, first to get it, or if you're playing for whatever it is, you got to weigh those things up. How risky do you want to play things? It's probably not the right spot for Hayward. Patrick asks a question. He's on Twitter at PJButter1093. He says, talk about sleepers 12 plus team leagues should keep an eye on and breakout players for this upcoming season. Well, I think we touched on quite a few of those guys already. Is there any other names you want to throw into the mix?
I can see a fair bit happening with Alex Len, to be honest.
I love Alex.
I really like Alex. Like, Tyson Chandler's definitely ahead of him, and he's going to start, but what, Tyson Chandler's 35, is he?
He's, no, I don't think he's 35. I think he's about 32. I'll look that up as you talk.
But, yeah, I can, Phoenix, best case scenario, what they're going to be 10th in the West, so they're going to have to start developing Len, and Chandler's probably going to help him, to be honest.
I can't see
getting any 20 to 25 minutes.
Yep. No, I really like Len. It's not sure. I don't think the minutes are going to be there enough for him to be 12 team ownable, but it's possible. He's been really, really good this preseason, so he's someone to keep an eye on. Anything deeper than 12 team league, I think you have to own him. I don't think there's any way around that he should be owned in anything deeper than 12. Anything deeper than 12, he should be owned, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, the next question, we had an email come through, and the main reason I want to get this email on the podcast is so I could play this.
My name is Jeff.
It comes in from Jeff Yusui. I hope I pronounced that correctly, which I'm sure I didn't. Hi, Josh. I just wanted to drop a question for you that you hopefully can answer through email or the podcast. I wanted to know your thoughts on some of the high-risk, high-reward players this year. Kobe, Rose, Wade. I'm definitely avoiding these guys in a snake draft because they always get drafted high. But in an auction, they can go for less than $5, where they can absolutely make your season. Daniel, you can kick it off here. Kobe, Rose, and Wade, the trio of old or perennially injured guys. How are you treating them this season?
In that order, I'd take easily Wade, then Rose, then Kobe.
Yep, I agree with that.
I don't see any problem with Wade. Like, Wade, what produces top 40 numbers, I think, per game?
Yep.
50 maybe? You know what you're going to get with him. It depends what type of league, but in Roto, Wade's a great option, I reckon.
In Roto, he's a superb option, and you can get him so late. You can get him. He's one. You mentioned those guys who sit at the top of draft lists. Like, he drops 20 spots. You can get him in the 80s. I've seen him go outside the top 100 in some leagues, and that is ludicrous value. Because even in a head-to-head league, yes, and ESPN standard league outside the top 100, that's a bench player, and you're getting Dwayne Wade on your bench. Like, please, it's a no-brainer. He might only play 70 games.
Yeah, there's only, 15 to 20 people in the league who score 20 points a game, so...
Yeah, exactly.
He's already elite in, one category.
Yeah.
And if he's going that late, then, yeah, no-brainer.
You have to with that. Now, Kobe's a similar situation, because per game, as long as you're not counting his turnovers and field goal percentage, which is a very viable strategy in head-to-head leagues, he was amazing last year. He was at like 25-5. Now, he's probably going to have minutes restrictions and back-to-back issues this season, which are going to be a problem. But is Kobe a guy that you just don't draft at all? Or, you know, if you see him dropping into the 90s, 100s, do you have to take the grab there as well?
He can be perfect for a certain team that needs scoring. Like, when you're drafting Gobert early or something like that, Kobe would be perfect, like high and low field goal, but you've got Gobert who's shooting, 60%, but no points. And then you've got Kobe who's shooting low 40s, but, you know, 25 points a game. So it just depends on your team. I got burned by Kobe last year, so I don't really want to talk about him too much.
But you can get him late. You can get him, you know, pretty late in a draft, you know, 80s or not. You could, if there's a situation where he drops to the 90s and he says, you know, in a snake draft they're going too high, I would disagree with that. I think these guys are going too low. And I think people are going the opposite way and, like, I'm avoiding these guys at all costs. And you can end up with, you know, I've got Wade on teams this year. I've got Derrick Rose on teams this year, who's a guy that I'd never really own because they're slipping into the 90s. And in an auction, you can get them at, you said, really cheap prices. I'm okay with it. You know, I don't want to get all three of them together. But adding one of them in on the chance that, hey, maybe this is the season that Derrick Rose stays healthy. Maybe Kobe plays 75 games. Maybe Dwayne Wade plays 75 games. And then that's, I'm not going to say it's game over, but it's, you're a massive chance of winning your league to get a guy like that at pick 90 who could be a top 40, 50 guy in the Wade or Kobe case. It's a no-brainer to spend a couple of bucks on them, I think. As long as you haven't loaded up your whole team with guys like that. Now, the Rose situation, he was really good in the playoffs last year. He looked, you know, almost back to Derrick Rose of old. And even Derrick Rose of old wasn't a fantastic top five fantasy talent. He had one, I think, top 10 fantasy finish. That was his MVP season. He had one other top 30 finish. His field goal percentage is so poor that it affects you. He doesn't hit enough threes. He scores a lot. His assist numbers, you know, have dropped off significantly. But again, if you're throwing a dollar on him or $2 on him or grabbing him in the 10th round or 9th round, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, definitely. Why not?
Exactly. At that point, and again, if someone decides, oh, I love Derrick Rose, I'm picking him at pick 30, well, you know what? You say, good, thanks, mate. Thanks for your money because you're not winning this league. It's done. Same as the guy who grabs Kobe in round 4. Like, forget about it. But I'm finding, and maybe it's just a lot of the leagues I'm in, people are just holding off these guys, and it gets to a point where it's sitting there at pick 95, and I go, I've got to take Dwayne Wade. I can't. Dwayne Wade at 95, look, this is silly. If he plays 70 games, it is a massive bargain. It is a huge steal to get him at that point. And as you mentioned, in a roto league, it's a no-brainer to grab him there. Or any of these guys, Kobe, maybe the field goal percentage might be an issue, same with Rose, but at that late, I think they're not going to completely handcuff that category or really handicap it, but you've got to watch what you're doing with it with the other players on your team. But I think that you can't, and I'm a big on not avoiding players altogether. I'm not saying not taking him ever. Like, there's certain situations where you're going to have to take them. Now, a guy that I've probably been, you know, saying I'm not going to draft at all is Drew Holiday. He looked fantastic today. He put up 8 assists, 5 rebounds, 12 points, I think it was, in 15 minutes. But that's the problem. That's the most minutes he's played this preseason. He's going to be capped at 15 minutes. Do you draft him at all? And do you just take a 15-minute player for the first 2 months of the season?
Roto, love him.
Yeah.
What's it? You're not finding anyone on the wire. You will find someone, but you're not finding anyone with that upside on the wire.
Not like him, no.
Like, he's got top 50 upside. Top 30.
I would say 30, yeah. I agree with that. In an 8-cat Roto, there is definite top 30 upside from Holiday.
And the only thing you're missing out on, worst case scenario, you cut him. If you get him pick 100, he's not in your top 10 anyway.
Agreed.
But you just cut him and you find the next best player. What are you losing?
In a daily changes head-to-head, though, it's a different situation because that's a roster spot that you can't rotate guys in with. And yeah, he'll be productive in 15 minutes for two games a week, relatively productive, but can you afford to hold, like, you say the Pelicans play three games a week, Holiday plays two and plays 15 minutes, when you could have gotten a guy playing three games worth of 30 minutes, so 90 minutes versus 30 minutes of production. Can you afford to do that for 2 months? Can you afford to lose that many categories that it will probably cost you for 2 months? I'm going to say you probably can't. It might be tough, but he's a guy that I'm going to be looking at and going, okay, he's gone from 15 to 20 minutes. 20 minutes to 25 can't be too far away. Maybe I'll have to start adding him from there. And that's where, because you're right, there's not going to be anyone on the waiver wire most likely this season that once he gets back to full health and full minute allotment is going to be as good as him. He will be the race to get Drew Holiday. And if you're in a league that uses fab bidding, when it comes out and we see Holiday's restrictions have been removed, you want to throw a massive chunk of money to get him.
Yeah, I just can't see someone selling him when you hear that news.
No, but if he's sitting on the waiver wire and no one's picked him up, if you start hearing that news, you've got to put money out there to grab him, because it's going to be hard to find someone who provides that value. Not hard, it's virtually impossible to get a guy that. We forget how good Drew Holiday is. He is a very, very good player. He's an awesome fantasy guy as well, and it's going to be hard to find someone like that, if not impossible. Daniel, I reckon we are finished.
Well, is it?
He's still young. How old is he? 25, if that.
Yeah.
I think
90, so 25.
Yeah, when he got drafted, he was the youngest player in his draft class. I think he was 18 when he got drafted. So, as long as he's been in the league, the injuries are a real pain in the ass for him, obviously, for his team and for us. But when he plays, he racks up the numbers. And when he plays, that Pelicans team is super dangerous. Him, Tyreek, Gordon, Davis, Ryan Anderson off the bench. It's Luke Babbitt as well, in jest. There's a lot of talent on that team.
He's everything you want in a fantasy point guard, though. So he shoots, roughly 45%, almost, or maybe 44%. Hits threes, 1.6 steals. And, his last 3 years, he's averaged 8, 7.9, and 6.9 assists. That's elite.
Yeah, definitely. He puts up great numbers, and we just hope that he can get back healthy and playing a big allotment of minutes. Daniel, we're finished with today's podcast. A good debut performance for you, so thank you for coming on.
No worries.
It was good to have you. Now, let's remind everyone of your brand new Twitter account, where they can find you there, and where they can find your writing and your new article that's coming out soon.
Yep, so it's at StroSwift and Rasball.com. And it's just the ACAT, anything to do with ACAT, I'll be writing for them.
So make sure you go and follow Daniel on Twitter at StroSwift. Check out his articles, which it's quite funny reading your articles on Rasball, reading the comments where everyone thinks you're actually Stromile Swift and comments, oh, Stromile, it's great to see you out here. Didn't know you loved fantasy. Which other NBA players are into fantasy? So that's pretty humorous to see that. Why have you got that name?
Well, in our league, we all, in the main league that I play in, we've all old NBA players. So we've got Magic Johnson, Manute Bol, all these players, and I just wanted to go with someone who had a really nice, cool name. So I went straight to it and then convinced my other mate to go Pop Spencer Bonsu.
And so that's the story. So when you go and see the articles come up by Stromile Swift, it is not in fact Stromile Swift, it is Daniel Reed. Thank you for coming on. It was good speaking fantasy with you on the podcast. We'll get you back on during the season, no doubt.
Yeah, thanks, mate.
No problem. Now, everybody, make sure you are checking out this poll. You are checking out this podcast because you listen to me talking, but make sure you're leaving a review on iTunes. And thank you to everybody who's done that. There's been a stack of reviews come in, but it's not everyone. And I want iTunes to break from the amount of reviews that come in. I know it's impossible because iTunes is I'm sure they've got pretty good servers, but I want to just smash them with reviews and get these numbers through the roof. Now, the highest we've peaked on the Australian charts is number 13. I want to get into the top 10. That's my next aim, is to get into the top 10 sports podcasts in Australia. We got to 13. That was pretty close. And it's done by subscribing and by leaving a review. So if everyone could do that, it would be superb. So thank you to everyone who's done that. Again, don't forget to check out Moneyball for all your Australasian daily fantasy needs. Hardwood Paroxysm, you might be listening to this podcast on the Hardwood Paroxysm Network. Make sure you check out their other podcasts, which there's a stack of them over there. Over and Back just did their top 50 players. There was an R Squared one talking with Nate Silver from 538, which is a great talk about their projection system, the Carmelo system, with Ian Levy on there. There's a stack of stuff on Hardwood Paroxysm, plus all the articles and the Hardwood Paroxysm Season Preview magazine, which I do encourage you to check out, and check out all the articles by all the very talented writers that are on there. Follow me on Twitter at @redrock_beeble. Daniel, once again, thank you.
No worries, mate.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.